From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. It's going to be a big hour coming your way with plenty of surprises, including the newest non-Democrat and possibly Republican in the future, Tulsi Gabbard, will be with us. And, of course, the number to call, 1-866-408-7669, or write me at briankilmeade.com. A lot to discuss. The President of the United States is going to be heading out to the West Coast doing some fundraising. He's going to also stop in Colorado. He'll deliver remarks on protecting and conserving America's outdoor spaces. Maybe he's going to try to secure that Senate seat because Michael Bennett's in, really feeling the heat. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Look what I've gotten done. Name me a president in recent history that's gotten as much done as I have in the first 2 years. Not a joke.
Can you have any time? How many can we name? And what you've got done is not looked at as a plus by a lot of people. Let's say economists and people who care about foreign policy. President Biden speaks and sat down with CNN. He brought note cards. It lasted 15 minutes.
Number two.
As of this morning, there were 28 missiles, of which 20 were shot down, and shot down two terrorist cruise missiles with the help of Stinger man pads. One person saved dozens of lives. Thank you for that.
President Zelensky weighing in the Ukraine, talking to the G7, coming to a head. The free world stays united behind Ukraine as Vladimir Putin rockets urban centers while Zelensky needs what Zelensky needs and how Putin's inner circle perhaps is turning on him.
Number one.
From my perspective in the House, it suggests it's not a question of whether Republicans win, but how big McCarthy's margin is in the end. In the Senate, that's still going to be tougher, and that's going to come down to some of the problems the Republicans created for themselves.
Yeah, that is true. That is Kimberly Strassel, The Wall Street Journal. The midterms, race by race, issue by issue, what the Fox power meter says, and how Senate and House should be by Election Day. A lot can change in the last 2 weeks. By the way, you can always get the podcast. You just click on podcast wherever you get them or foxnewspodcast.com. With me in studio, one of the funniest guys in America, brand new movie out, Rob Schneider. Rob, I was able to grab you from Fox and Friends bring you up. And was it my
persuasion? I had nowhere to go.
That hurts my feelings. Here I am thinking I'm a great persuader of.
No, I've always enjoyed you, Brian, so it's a pleasure. I feel like I know you, you know, because you're. How many hours do you do a day?
Well, minimum six.
6 hours?
Yeah. And then you have fun afterwards. We got to get the Saturday show going. So one of the
Saturday
things,
too.
Because now that I thought you were a fan. You don't know Saturday's at 8 o'clock, but you're in Arizona, so it's 2 hours difference.
Yeah, yeah.
It's six o'clock. That's dinner time.
Sometimes
for you guys.
I hear you on the tape delay. Sometimes I hear I get like I'll punch it in the Tesla and I go like and it's like a month old, and I listen to it anyway.
Why is that, Eric? Why is he putting on month-long podcasts?
Yeah, Eric, what's going on with that?
Yes, that's Eric right over there. He's a genius, and that's Pete. So, Rob,
good
by the way—
people working for you.
The other thing is, which I found unique, as a comedian who's an actor, you dress up. I mean, you look the part today.
Thank you. You know when I put this on, it's so funny because I said, because I got to work out for the new movie I'm doing, and I told the tailor, a nice Italian guy, you know, Vito, I said, hey, don't take it out because I'm going to lose weight. He said, okay, but— just in case you don't, I'm gonna leave it that way, okay?
A doubter right away. Can anyone believe in me? Is that what you're thinking, Ron?
I go, this guy knows I'm a liar. My body knows I'm a liar. He must hear that all the time. No, I'm going to lose the weight. Okay, but just in case you don't, I'm going to fix that.
Right.
I miss doing those characters. They don't let you do those anymore.
You know, so really, why?
Because anything outside, you know, I don't know. I'm part Filipino and German. I don't know what I am. And so, but they just, you know, anybody outside your, you know, it's cultural appropriation. I thought the whole point of cultures was to be appropriated. Look, give us, take this. Like,
yeah,
you know,
and have fun with it.
And have fun with it. I remember I insulted the whole country of Spain one time because I said something was paella and I took a picture of it. And I swear 750,000 people in Spain were like, that's not the paella. It comes with rabbit and asparagus. And I don't know what the heck. So what you made was stuff on rice. And I said, okay, I'm sorry.
Now,
I give up.
Now, a couple of things, because we do know I think it was Jill Biden that compared all Spanish people. What was it? All Spanish people to a taco?
First of all, nobody uses the word Latinx.
Right.
I've been married to my wife who's Mexican for 13 years. She's never says, you know, I'm Latinx. You know, that's just, it's insanity.
Right.
You know, so, but
well, there's so much insanity going on right now, which is why people watch you in movies. They watch.
How do they get away with it? It's only because of the graciousness of the Hispanic community that Jill Biden didn't get crucified for that.
But a couple of things, this is one. Like, you'll find there's a few things that I'll say, and you'll go, "That's genius." And here's something else that nobody has jumped on this. You know, he got less Hispanic votes than any Democrat in a long time, and Trump got more. And now they seem to be shifting more and more to the right. Well, do you know that Hugo Chavez is – not Hugo Chavez, but Cesar Chavez's bust is at his desk in the Oval Office? And I think that is an over – since when is a guy from Delaware with Cesar Chavez? That's a push like, hey, Latino community, come back.
The assumption that the Latino community is going to vote just automatically for – that's what happens is, like, they just assume that this voting block is going to continue when they're not serving those particular – interest groups at all. And so I say this to people when I'm performing, and it's true. It's like Hispanics don't want other people coming into this country illegally. So I don't want someone coming into this country, try to take the job I just took it. I just took it. Now you come to try to take it. I already took it.
You earned it. He earns it. He gets
it. You come here. Look, the fact of the matter is we do need people to work in this country and who are willing to work hard and do jobs that other people don't want to do. I walk in someplace now, because, you know, during the whole pandemic, seeing anybody working anywhere and getting people coming back to work was incredible. So I see somebody working, I always shake their hands and say, thanks for working today.
Exactly, because a couple other things is that in New York, the front page of the New York Post today, there's something like 5,500 children that got to be worked into the New York City system, 90% of which don't speak any English at all. So you have teachers in there walk in and they can't communicate with kids in the back. These kids are – it's not their fault. But the other third graders or fourth graders, and you have kids, they come home with first grade homework because they're trying to – they have to level out the whole class and they can't even understand these kids.
We don't understand, and we won't for a decade, the real – the real problems that are going to come from being behind, and from the emotional problems that they're going to have, how they're 2 years behind. And it's especially the poorer children have it even worse, because I think some of the numbers were is incredible, the losses that were gained. You have poorer families, people of color that their reading standards were climbing and climbing and climbing, and all of a sudden dropped off the face of the earth.
Pandemic.
You know? When I saw some kids outside of Starbucks, online, I didn't see it personally, but trying to get the internet during the pandemic with their computer because they don't have it at home. So the assumption that this is just all going to take care of itself, it was very shameful. I mean, I think it's coming out now that everybody knows, and you talk about this, that the lockdowns were worse than – don't make the cure worse than the problem.
So the other thing, Rob, so we were really good at coming up with a plan to destroy everyone's lives, got to go home, you got to get quarantined, you got to get protected. What about a plan to get these kids caught up? What about a president of the United States or a governor that says, my problem is the grades have dropped to the people that put me in office. Their kids, their grade level has dropped. So we're going to do a massive effort. It's going to be a couple hours extra of school a day. We're going to get the extra money in the budget to maybe get a Huntington Learning Center.
Instead of
maybe give it to them to get these kids to go to extra school. Because a lot of these kids, believe it or not, miss going to school.
Maybe if the schools had a Ukrainian flag out in front of it, they would get the funding.
I'm pretty sure that with this administration.
We have to extend. We were behind before this. You have to understand, in Europe, the school year is longer. And I do think we need to extend it. And we have to. We're going to have to throw money at the problem. And it is a problem. We need to not only catch up to where we were, where we were behind, we have to now catch up to get these kids up to where they were 2 years ago.
And I think you could enlist parents to do a lot of that. They could help out.
Absolutely.
I know that they're overstretched already. So listen, Rob is here because, number one, he hasn't said it yet or to anybody else, but he wanted to meet me. And
yes,
he also,
you dress very well. I go, okay, well, that's – when on Gutfeld, I go, that's the only guy whose suit looks good.
It's me, right?
Yeah, I says, Brian looks good. He obviously works out, which you need to do. But, you know, because guys can cruise in their late 40s, early 50s. You go, hey, that guy still looks really good. But you got to spend some time in the gym.
Absolutely.
You got to get in there.
I do. I don't have. I have an unforgiving metabolism. Because if I mean, today, one thing I do, I don't eat until after 12.
Oh, yeah, that helps.
So,
yeah.
So that helps.
I know.
And then, but then when I start eating, I'm really start eating. But let me just get you. I just want to make sure everybody knows you're looking for a movie that you bring your family to.
Yeah,
it's here. Thank you. Daddy's Daughter Trip is in theaters, and which I think is so cool. And my son's the biggest Rob Schneider and Adam Sandler fan in particular. And he watched every show. In fact, the movie that you guys shot on Long Island, he went out and just watched the shooting of it every free moment he had. And what I think that people love is the sense of family. So you're in a movie, you bring a Sandler. Sandler's in a movie, he brings Rob. And you have Adam's wife plays your wife in this movie again.
Yeah. Well,
and then your daughter's in this. That's kind of cool.
There's a nice little scene where, like, we're you know, because I'm such a moron in the movie and in real life, but we lose a place where we're living and we have to move into her friend's house. And then our daughter comes in the movie, which is my real daughter, Miranda. She walks in and she says, "Mom, I can't sleep. Can I sleep with you?" And she says, "Absolutely." And you can just see the way Adam Sandler's wife, Jackie Sandler, you can just see the way she just gets up. And you know she's done this 1,000 times.
She's a mom.
She gets up and go sleep. It was just such a real, it's like one take. That's it. We can't do any better than that.
So this is a non-actor question. When you see your daughter and you're acting, and you got to act goofy and maybe without the values and ethics that you have, whatever it is, just be common. Do you see your daughter or are you channeled into a character or in a comedy? Is it different?
Well,
because you can act different characters.
Well, but at this point, you know, because I had a really goofy wig in the movie, and she was a natural. I didn't have to give her notes. She knew what she was doing.
But when you see her, what do you see? Do you see your daughter?
I do. But I you know what I see? As I already see a young actor, and I know that she's into it, and
right.
She loves it. And about halfway through, she understood it was a job. Because in the beginning, she didn't. She said, "Okay, we're done." And I said, "Okay, no, you're done. Now daddy's turn. It's daddy has to get his side. You have to shoot." And she didn't understand that. But she
can you explain to me who doesn't know? So in other words, she does her side.
My daughter.
And then you have to do your side from the other side.
She was 8, and we would shoot her side, whatever. And then she said, "Okay, we're done. I'm going to leave now." And then I said, no, we have to do it again, honey. And
wow.
So she said, "Well, no, but I don't want to. I just did it." And I said, no, it's not that. It's not that you didn't do a good job. You did great. It's just now it's daddy's turn." And so it was that stuff was the only part. But we practiced for months and months and months. Just my favorite scene in the whole movie is called the star scene. And it really is like we're sitting in the car on the side of the road because we're a broke family, doesn't have any money to take my kid on a fun spring break. So I just pretend to take her to like a water park. I take her to a car wash. You know, and so it's these kind of things. Then we go see a drive-in movie. And we're behind the fence, and we can't really hear anything. And I got Paramount was very nice to give me Jerry Lewis's a movie from Jerry Lewis. You know, Family Jewels from like the early 60s.
Wow.
And I had to pay for it, but they were nice enough to give me a break on it. But anyway, and we're just watching this thing. So and then at the end of the night, we look at these stars and we tell each other how much we love each other, and it's really beautiful because I said I love you because we practice this, you know. At her house, because we say this, you know, before she goes to sleep, I go, "I love you all the way to that star and back 1,000 times." And she'd say, "I love you to the end of the universe and back infinitely, to infinity." And then we just change it to, "I love you all the way to my nose and to my ear and halfway back." And then she said this beautiful line that she just ad-libbed. She said, "I love you all the way to my index finger, to my thumb, and they're touching." And it's just, it was so beautiful.
That is awesome.
And to see a real father and daughter, we watched Paper Moon, a little bit of it. I watched the whole thing, but my daughter, because she's 8, I wanted to see a real father. It's Ryan O'Neal and Tatum O'Neal in a movie together. And it's really magical to see.
I'd love to see that again. I remember when I was, I think I'm Tatum O'Neal's age or something like that.
She's
I remember
brilliant.
Watching it. Yeah.
But you can see the comfort level that the two of them had together.
Rob, I know you used to do in the podcast with it just goes on and on.
You have.
But I have to actually take a break.
You have to take commercials. You
right.
have to pay for this.
Right.
You have to pay for this.
But one story's better than the next. And I'm saying, how rude do I say it if I stop the Paper Moon story? But look, we got that in. Rob Schneider's here for another segment until he storms
out.
Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
All right, do you really control your retirement money? If you got a 401k or IRA, you may think you do, but you don't. The government controls it. They decide how much you can borrow, when you must pay it all back, and you'll owe taxes and penalties for taking money out too soon. Let's say you're in an emergency like what's happening in Florida right now. Go to bank on yourself. It is a better way to grow and protect your hard-earned money. It gives you control of your life and your later years. This retirement plan alternative has never had a losing year in 160 years. And there's something about the peace of mind that you feel when you do and you actually go ahead and bank on yourself. It's guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income. It's no luck involved. It's called skill or guesswork required. Your plan doesn't go backward when the markets tumble. Both your principal and growth are locked in. You're in control. You get access to your money for any purpose with no questions asked and without government penalties or restrictions, which I hate. So bank on yourself. How much income you can take home or when you can take it is in your hands. This is your money anyway. Try that with a 401k. Try that with an IRA. You cannot. And most of all, you get peace of mind. You can get a free report with details on how to bank on yourself, strategies, ads, guarantees, predictability, and control to your financial plan. Just go to bankonyourself.com/Brian. That's bankonyourself.com/Brian. You'll be glad you did.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Rob Schneider's in studio. It's our privilege. If you're watching Fox Nation, Rob, I didn't tell you you're on television still. You're streaming.
Oh, beautiful.
This is really going to make you famous. You're not going to be able to walk outside. His new movie is called Daddy's Daughter Trip. It's in theaters starting Friday, right?
Starting
expanding.
We just started in Arizona. Now it's going out there. And Cinemark, thank you for taking me out.
Wife co-wrote the movie, right?
Yeah, Patricia, yeah. She's great. And my buddy, yes, your buddy now, Jamie Lisso.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he was your friend first, though. So
yeah,
for
I
the
got
record.
Him first, yeah. Right? I want him back.
And he raves about you. So I want to bring you to what happened in stand-up. This woman, Ariel Elias, was on stage, mm-hmm. and she started taking questions from the audience, and she ends up getting a beer thrown at her. Here's how it sounded.
Whoever you want to vote. I don't care who you voted for. I'm just happy we're all here together.
So you voted for Biden.
Okay. I don't know. Why does it matter? Yeah, so what? Why does it matter?
I can just tell by your jokes you voted for Biden.
Why are we talking all right. about politics?
I can tell by the fact that you're still talking when nobody wants you to that you voted for Trump.
So Rob, what happened?
Who threw the beer?
The boyfriend or the husband of the guy threw a Trump supporter or whatever. She didn't like her. Threw the beer at her. She picked up and drank it. So from doing stand-up, from seeing what happened to Dave Chappelle and seeing what happened with Chris Rock, do you worry about this?
I have extra security on my shows.
You do?
I do, yeah.
Because you're always got, especially, do you talk politics at all?
Yeah, a little bit, but to get laughs. I mean, it's about getting laughs, but at the same time, you have to talk about what's happening in society. I mean, if you're a comedian of a certain age, like I am, in my 50s, you got to be influenced by Richard Pryor and George Carlin. They were commenting on what was happening in society.
Right.
And I think in any art form, whether it's if you do sculpture or whether, you know, if you're a musician, especially if you're a comedian, you have to talk about what's happening in your culture at the time. It's not about relevance. It's about, you know, it's about getting people. The only difference between artists and everybody else or good writers, which comedians should be, is that they know themselves a little bit more because they spend the time. And most people are busy. They're going to work. They're taking care of the kids. They're coming back. They're tired. You know, they're inundated with enough stuff. They're driving or they're on the bus or whatever. And so, trying to get to work, commuting. So it's that knowing yourself a little bit more and delving into it. But you do have a strain of intolerance. Like the way that comedian handled that, she wanted to have a conversation with somebody who agreed with her and saw that same echo chamber. She didn't want to have anybody. She didn't want to have any discourse.
No.
There's not about dissuasion. It's like she's willing to talk to her own people. And you learn nothing only talking to your own people. You have to have, if your ideas are good enough, hold them up to debate.
Right.
And see who can talk better. And that was just about silencing someone who was on a different political agenda than she was.
Right. And, Rob, we have a short time now. Come back for another 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay? All right, great. Rob's here. Go see his movie, Daddy's Daughter Trip.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This week, President Biden pardoned thousands of convicted marijuana users. And it feels like maybe he celebrated with them a little because yesterday, Biden gave a speech at a car factory and opened with this.
Let me start off with two words. Made in America.
Wow. Well, let me respond with two words. Jesus H. Christ. Biden was then heard criticizing reporters at the White House for shouting questions at him. Questions like, what year is it? And who's the current president?
So that's as edgy as I've heard SNL get with a Democrat,
nice,
Rob Schneider.
Good. Well, the whole point is to make fun of whoever's in power, whether it's Democrats or whatever. I remember one time when we were making fun of the Clintons, and Julia Sweeney played the daughter. You know, what's her name? The Clinton
Chelsea.
Kid, Chelsea Clinton. And we got phone calls like from the Democratic Party. That's too much. You can't make fun of the you can't have the children because we put braces on her and everything. And it's like you have to make fun of the people in power. And I'm glad that they're doing it because that's what needs to happen.
But Rob, it's not happening. I mean,
it hasn't happened. Yeah.
Do you remember? And this is again one of those observations that you're going to go, that Brian is really smart. Do you know when to look like
and well dressed?
Right. Thank you. Do you remember when look like Biden was out of it and he was just done? Jeff Sudeikis played him when they were doing a mockery of the Democrats' debate. And he was having fun. He was making fun of him. He doesn't know what's going on. He's talking too loud. He's interrupting. Yeah. As soon as he got the nomination, they bring in a guy that just acts normal as opposed to Trump. And I'm wondering, did the SNL brass, Lorne Michaels, just say, I'm just concerned that a Republican will win or that Trump will get another term and just throw comedy into the back burner?
I think it's also a fact of, like, it really was. I mean, Dana Carvey and I were talking about this. I had to throw Dana Carvey under the bus right here. But no, but Dana said, like, when he first, his impressions are, he's the greatest impressionist we've ever had on Saturday Night Live, by far.
That was a great Biden, by the way.
And his Biden, he said when he first started doing it, the audience is like, ooh, we can't laugh at that yet. Because it's true. Because it's like, you know, it's like seeing, like, you know, one of the deer gets hit on the side of the road or something, and he's just kind of, you know, jumping around, or, you know, it's just like, oh, man. Oh, you know, it's like, it's a car crash. It's like when his bike fell over.
Right.
If Biden would have got up and said, Putin made that bike, it would have got a laugh, you know?
It would have.
Yeah, but so I do think there was that tendency. But you have to make fun of the people in power.
Right.
I mean, the idea that the Democrats just, you know, just manufactured this guy to run to become president because he was the least offensive of all the candidates.
And he's not Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And they scared him because Bernie couldn't win. So, Rob, how do you feel about going on social media now, doing shows like this and coming out and say, hey, I'm a Republican?
Well, you just – you have to know you're going to get the ideological barrage of moronic, people saying horrible things about you. And that's okay. I don't look at it. I mean, truthfully, I mean, I don't know what the Democrats are complaining about. They have all the tech companies. They got Washington Post, New York Times. It's funny with people complaining about, like, how, like, you know, if you know, Elon Musk buys Twitter. These billionaire having a billionaire buy this, and it's like, don't you work for the Washington Post?
Yes. Isn't that what Jeff Bezos?
Is there any irony available in your brain at all? And so, but it's like we have everything. I mean, can we not? What do conservatives have? We have one news channel and a guy that sells pillows.
Right.
Can we have that
on that channel?
Yeah, on that channel only.
It's the same thing.
I invented the perfect. My towels absorb water. Every towel absorbs water.
Right. But the thing is that we will have, like, my next guest is Tulsi Gabbard, and we'll have Democrats on. We have Harold Ford on, and people give their opinions outnumbered. There'll be Democrats on the couch.
Yes. Well, I mean, if you look at Tucker Carlson's ratings, it can't be all. It's not all Republicans. There's rational news. There's absolutely you allow oppositional thought here, and it's not allowed.
Right.
It's not allowed on CNN.
See, I look at rational too. Is we're in an oil and gas shortage. This is my 1970s. We have enough oil and gas. Why are we not using it? Well, because of this religion called green energy.
I know.
It's a religion.
I wish it worked.
There's no rationality.
It doesn't work. I mean, there's a beautiful documentary actually produced by, like, the most leftist guy there is. He's the executive producer. I don't say he made it. It's called Planet of the Humans. Do yourself a favor, your listeners. Watch that.
Okay.
It just basically shows why green energy doesn't work. I want it to work. It doesn't work.
And that's why you have California. One of the things, it's out of – you're not going to be able to buy a car. Yeah. There's no more new gas stations allowed in California.
Well, you know what's crazy is that there was a great video on Twitter, of all places, where everybody was lined up for hours trying to charge their Tesla, and they couldn't do it.
Right. And Tesla's the one who supposedly built their own terminals. They still can't do it.
No, and they also – I love that the governor of California is like, hey, listen, don't charge your car. Don't charge my car.
You just told me
I had to get a car that I can't afford.
Right.
Those aren't the cheapest cars, and now I can't charge my car. So it's lunacy. There's not one part of – that's why, like, I couldn't stay in California, and I couldn't definitely stay a Democrat anymore. There's not one aspect of your life that the Democrats don't want to involve themselves in of your life.
But according to reports, Democrats and Republicans will love Daddy's Daughter Trip. They've done studies.
Your money's just as good. It's newly printed. If you're a liberal, we'd love to have you.
Right. It's one of these non-offensive, apolitical movies that is just for people
other
people.
It's about family. It's about dreams and families and about hanging on to your dreams. And if you have nothing, you can still make something beautiful.
All right. Tulsi Gabbard's next. Rob, you've been a wonderful surprise for our audience for the last 45 minutes. Hopefully this is just the first of many appearances.
I'd love to come back.
All right. Do you think he means that? Call me, 1-866-408-7669. Back in a moment.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up.
Hey, it's Will Cain, co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. Join me as I share my thoughts on a wide range of topics, from sports and pop culture to politics and business.
The Will Cain Podcast. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Watch out for the next superstar.
Here we go. You're talking about her off air all week. Here we go.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard is a rising star in this party. Tulsi Gabbard should be here tonight. The reality is we do not have enough young veterans in this party, enough young women in this party, enough people of color in this party.
You're considered a rising star in the Democratic Party. You had a position of leadership in the Democratic National Committee.
Tulsi's story is really, I think, tailor-made for Hollywood. I half expect Natalie Portman to be vying for the role any day now because this story is not to be believed.
Tulsi Gabbard, she is going to be the one to watch tonight at the DNC.
And Tulsi Gabbard, she's an Iraq War veteran. Yeah. Yesterday she was promoted from captain to major in the Hawaii National Guard. So she certainly is a rising star. The fact that she's not here tonight for whatever reason is unfortunate.
I don't know, but in a battle, I want her in my trench. I tell you that much.
Me too.
Right. That's the coveted CNN endorsement that was there for Tulsi Gabbard early, but she couldn't tolerate it anymore. In the last 48 hours, she has decided to leave the Democratic Party. But we always love having her on. Tulsi Gabbard, former congresswoman from Hawaii, Democratic presidential candidate. Tulsi, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Good morning. Good to talk to you.
So I wanted to play that. I heard some of this on Tucker last night. Eric was able to grab it. I did not realize how high in esteem the Democratic Party had you. I know you had a leadership position, but what was it like then?
Look, when I first got elected to Congress back in 2012, I was welcomed with open arms. And it wasn't because I was really any different than I am today. I've always been an independent-minded person, an independent Democrat, but they saw my story, my background, and provided me with opportunities to speak to the American people, which I took advantage of. I think the thing that happened was once they realized that I was not someone who was just going to go with the flow, read the talking points, and, you know, play along for the advancement of so-called political careers or ambitions, then they started to distance themselves. Once they saw I was speaking out against, you know, regime change war and new Cold War, a nuclear arms race, the issues that are impacting us here at home, as I was speaking out about protecting our freedom of speech, things started to change.
Right. And have you joined the Republican Party? Are you staying independent? What are you going to do?
Yeah, no, I made the decision to leave the Democratic Party alone, really because of the fundamental problems with this woke ideological leadership in the party. You know, my commitment, my oath, my loyalty is to our country. It has always been country first. And to be associated with a party that is driven by this woke insanity, essentially opposing and undermining our freedoms, is not something that I could do any longer.
So what's been the reaction since you made the announcement, Tulsi?
My phone was ringing off the hook, text messages, a lot of messages coming in from people across the political spectrum, frankly. I mean, some of them were from former colleagues of mine in Congress. Many others came from people, fellow Democrats, who are as sickened and disheartened by, again, this fanatical woke ideology that the Democratic Party of today is choosing to represent, sickened and heartbroken that for a while now, Democratic Party leaders seem to have forgotten the vision of people like Martin Luther King, the leadership of people like President Kennedy. They have forgotten the people, and they have become a party of elites who care more for themselves, their own political ambition and power, and more than they do about actually fighting for everyday Americans, which is the reason I joined the Democratic Party 20 years ago.
Right. I mean, for example, with the Republican Party, you have people on the Republican side that said this is a conflict worth fighting and backing Ukraine. You have Republicans who say you should absolutely not be in there. But no one's canceling anybody. You could
exactly
say what you want. So, okay, I disagree with Lindsey Graham. I agree with Tulsi Gabbard, whatever it is. But it's an exciting debate. That's why you don't have to go to another channel to get a debate. So,
that's such an important point, Brian, is that debate. You know, when I was 21, I was running for the state house in Hawaii, and I was not affiliated with the party. I didn't have any, real interest in politics before I saw that opportunity to go and make change. And that was one of the things that drew me to the Democratic Party, was that big tent, inclusive party that encouraged debate, that encouraged people with different views to come forward. And that has not only been lost. If you bring forward a view that is different from whatever, you know, the elite woke leaders of the party have chosen is the issue of the day, the narrative of the day, then they will do everything they can to destroy you. Whereas, I think there's potential. The Republican Party has become very diverse. The Republican Party has become this party that's actually fighting for, at least a lot of people in the party are fighting for the American people who are struggling every day, whose
yeah.
voices aren't being heard. And I think it's important to note.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz basically destroyed the DNC. I mean, she was spending money on her big SUVs and her hairstyle, and they left nothing in the coffers. Hillary Clinton would tell you the same thing. There was nothing there by the time she got the nomination. That was seemed to be the era in which you went from leadership to skeptic. What really hit when the rubber hit the road for you as in your leadership position? Can you bring us back to that?
Well, first of all, what you say about Debbie Wasserman Schultz is true, but also the problem is much bigger than her. She is just one representative of the bigger problems that that the Democratic Party has had and continues to worsen. But I was a vice chair of the DNC when Debbie Wasserman Schultz was the chair. I was pushing for transparency. I was pushing for greater opportunities for voters to know exactly what Democratic candidates were standing for. If you recall, at that time, she unilaterally was trying to essentially limit Hillary Clinton's exposure and having to be challenged by Bernie Sanders on a debate stage. And, you know, introduced a rule, again, unilaterally, had no input or say from any of the vice chairs or officers of the party, saying that, hey, if any other candidate goes and participates in a forum or debate that the DNC has not sanctioned, they will be banned from all future DNC debates. How undemocratic is that for an authoritarian leader of the Democratic Party to make that ruling? And so that it was that and a number of other issues that I knew that I could make more of a difference elsewhere, and resigned as vice chair of the DNC so that I could actually go and participate and speak freely on behalf of the American people in our country.
But you lose leadership, maybe the backing of the most of the party. But to me, this was a moment that stood out and would expose Kamala Harris to be the inept politician that she is. If she took out Joe Biden by saying, I was that little girl that you were against busing into white neighborhoods. And then the next debate had you next to her. Listen to this exchange.
Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president. But I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
So she never recovered from that. When did you realize that her record needed to be examined?
Well, look, I mean, all you'd have to do is Google Kamala Harris record, and these are the things that came up. These are issues that I've been working on in Congress that I felt very strongly about. We had a person running for president who she claimed to be very proud of her record, and so I took the opportunity to hold her to account for that and explain to the American people why she did what she did. Kamala Harris is a perfect example of everything that is wrong with Washington and the Democratic Party of today. I pointed out at that time that she made light, joking, laughing about the fact that there is a double standard. Nothing happened to her when she smoked pot, but she was very happy to keep people in prison and put people in jail for doing the same thing. And as we all saw the other day, she's still laughing about this on Seth Meyers, still making light of a broken criminal justice system, still making light of the fact that there are rules for others, but not for her. It's her and people like her who should not hold these positions of power, because they don't believe in anything except pleasing and serving themselves and their own selfish ambition.
So, Tulsi, in closing, so you made this move, career move. So what would be next for you? I mean, where do you see yourself now?
Yeah, you know, Brian, I've never, ever approached politics as a career. My life is something that I've dedicated to do my best to be of service, to God and to our country. That path has taken me in and out of politics at different times. I'm still continuing to serve in the Army Reserves as a lieutenant colonel, and I'm going to continue that mission of service. I'm going to continue to speak up for freedom, for our Constitution and Bill of Rights, and fight back against those who are trying to tear our country apart.
Do you regret leaving the seat in Congress?
I don't. You know, Congress, unfortunately, has become so dysfunctional. And again, the woke leaders of the Democratic Party there would not allow for legislation to move forward or any kind of attention to be brought to issues important to the American people that they did not sanction.
Understood. So hopefully you get here. I mean, every time you're on, I know everyone loves seeing you, even if it doesn't matter if you agree or not. Everyone knows that you bleed red, white, and blue. And I think that's kind of a relief to see politicians who feel that way.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate you having me on, and always enjoy our conversations.
Absolutely. Tulsi Gabbard, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Tulsi Gabbard makes a big move. Leads the Democratic Party. Once one of the hottest politicians that on the left says, I'd rather not be involved in your party. So that is big news. Thanks so much for listening. Hey, by the way, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Hope to see you November 12th in Tulsa, KRMG listeners. November 13th in Tulsa, I should say. November 12th in Brandon, Mississippi. And December 2nd in Newark, New Jersey.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We're coming to you from 40th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Bottom of the hour, Rich Lowry will join us from National Review. And right now, David Avell, if you're watching Fox Nation, you see David go all over the channel, but you see him especially now during election season, GOPAC chair and GOP strategist. David, welcome.
Glad to be back.
So, David, it's not all about politics, and I'll prove it. Here's my big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three. Sponsored by Crunch Fitness. Interested in owning your own business in a growing $30 billion industry? Check out Crunch Fitness at crunch.com.
Number three.
Look what I've gotten done. Name me a president in recent history that's gotten as much done as I have in the first 2 years. Not a joke.
Biden speaks. President sat down with CNN. He brought no cards. The interview lasted about 15 minutes. We'll bring you the highlights.
Number two.
As of this morning, there were 28 missiles, of which 20 were shot down, and shot down two terrorist cruise missiles with the help of Stinger man pads. One person saved dozens of lives. Thank you for that.
And thanks, Derek. I saw one of those shots. It's amazing. Taking out a missile with a rocket that you hold on your shoulder. Coming to a head, the free world stays united behind Ukraine as Vladimir Putin rockets urban centers, while Zelensky needs what he needs, and how Vladimir Putin's inner circle might be looking to close it in on him.
Number one.
From my perspective in the House, it suggests it's not a question of whether Republicans win, but how big McCarthy's margin is in the end. In the Senate, that's still going to be tougher, and that's going to come down to some of the problems the Republicans created for themselves.
Yeah, that's true. Perhaps Kim Strassel of The Wall Street Journal. Midterms, race by race, issue by issue, and what the Fox power meter says now about Senate and House seats and what should happen on Election Day. And we're about 27 days out. David, first off, when I saw you in August, you weren't as optimistic as you must feel right now.
Sure. The wave continues to rebuild, and you see it in these battleground states where Republican turnout continues to be high and intensity amongst Democrats is down. I'll give you one example. In Florida, of the big five, three are predominantly Democratic counties, Broward, Palm Beach, and Miami. In the primaries, let's take Broward County, for example, you had a 68% Democrat turnout. So far in the general, they're at 57%. In Palm Beach, 63% turnout amongst Democrats in the primary, 52% mm-hmm. in the general. And in Miami, through mail-in ballots, primary 48%. In the general, it's down 41%. And you're seeing that around the country. Stacey Abrams has talked about it in Georgia. In fact, the former mayor, Keisha Bottoms, who now is working in the Biden administration, talked about how she didn't see Democratic base voters turning out at levels that they should be. All of that, you take a strong Republican turnout, you take independents, which you and I always talk about is really the vote deciders in elections. Where do independents line up? Right now they're lining up with Republicans, hence why the wave rebuilds.
So I understand that crime ads are playing a big role in these competitive House seats, number one, and that is new, but it's not because Republicans are geniuses. Right. It's sadly the truth. Yeah. We watched three cops get shot this morning. Yeah. We see what's happening in New York on a regular basis, the random acts of crime. And a guy with an axe at McDonald's gets 18 hours in jail and goes back and gets arrested again last night. So this is the reality, and you cannot say the Democrats are the party of law and order.
The direct result of the Biden administration's policies and with not enough focus put on these rogue prosecuting attorneys who say they won't enforce the law. Krasner in Philadelphia is a great example. But as you said,
praised by Lieutenant Governor Fetterman.
That's right. And why Fetterman now has his challenges from a turnout perspective. Republicans are out registering Democrats by 10% in the city of Philadelphia. It goes to your point you just made, which is you don't have to keep screaming too much. I mean, it's on voters. They see it with their own eyes every day in their communities.
You don't need a Republican to stand up and say, I have a great economic plan. All you have to say is it's not that, because what you've seen with the rescue package, what you've seen with this latest new Green Deal package, which is the Inflation Reduction Act, it's not aptly named. People know it. And then what you see is when he says inflation is transitory and it isn't, when he says a recession isn't two negative growth quarters and it is, that's when people just say, I don't even know if Republicans are going to tell me. I know I can't believe that.
That's right. And you see that particularly with independent voters, that not only do they not like the direction the country is going in under Biden, they blame him and his economic policies for why we are where we are, particularly when it comes to the Green New Deal or the Inflation Reduction Act or whatever we're calling it these days.
So a couple of things. The one thing I understand, election integrity does rank in almost every top five list of things that matter. And one thing that Democrats outrank you on that ticks off independents when you question election results. That president's been very quiet of late. I'm sure he hasn't changed his opinion. How do you handle that? Because a lot of these nominees got their job by saying President Trump was right.
You know, it's interesting. If you're going to make those accusations, you have to have credible evidence. Because an interesting underneath the numbers, while people might be concerned about voter fraud, they think their county clerk or the official that handles elections in their area are okay. They think they do a really good job. So if you're going to make accusations, and this is on both sides, you have both sides making accusations about voter fraud, or certainly the Democrats make their accusations about voter suppression, of which no evidence suggests that. I mean, turnout in Georgia is very strong, despite the belief by pushed Stacey by
Abrams.
Democrats that and Stacey Abrams that turnout would be down. It's not down. In sub voter groups, it is, but not overall. If you're going to make these accusations, you better have credible evidence.
So I want you to hear what Joe Biden said last night and about what he said to Jake Tapper whenever they taped it. He says this about what he's done. Cut three.
We still have real problems. But we look what we got done. We passed so much legislation that significantly makes a point about, you know, for example, the American Rescue Plan, the legislation to deal with inflation, the Inflation Act. We moved along. I mean, there's so much that's been accomplished.
You want to take him on that? He has passed a lot of legislation.
Every president thinks they've passed more than any other president. So his comment isn't necessarily new for a president to say.
But he's had impact.
And
you're willing to run on that impact.
He has had impact. Unfortunately, it's been a negative impact. I mean, as we just said, the direct result of his policies are why we are where we are economically. And when you raise taxes on Americans, when you gut the energy industry, when we were a net producer of energy, net producer, and we gave that up and said we're going to go start buying oil from people who make it dirtier, not as healthy, and charge us more for it. Those are all a result of Biden's policies, and that's why his approval rating is in the 40s.
Interesting, too, if the chairman of GOPAC says that, attacking Democrats, it's not really news. When Jamie Dimon does, he's the chairman of the number one, the most profitable bank in the country, he says, we are the swing oil producer. We should not be asking Saudi Arabia for anything. He said we should have increased production of oil and gas the minute this war started, and we should have been in full throttle come March. It started in February. And then the president can honestly say, I had to look the left wing of my party and stare him down and say, I had to do what's better for my country. Mm-hmm. And you might have had a harder sell in the midterms.
May have, but that's not where we are. And then you have Senator Joe Manchin, who tells us he's going to get the permitting bill, and then he can't get the permitting bill. So
because he now, never checked with Republicans.
He didn't work with Republicans. And you know the little bit of the support he enjoyed amongst Republicans immediately went away. They were happy when he was stopping the Biden administration, but when he fell in line, he became just like all the other Democrats. But you bring up your initial question brought up or brought up an interesting perspective, which is it's not just Republicans criticizing him. Now you have Democrats in Congress openly saying it's time for someone else.
You had Tim Ryan flat out say that. You had another congresswoman running for office. I forgot her name. And you had Mark Kelly basically disparage the president, say, I don't agree with his border policy and his energy policy on the stage. And the problem with Mark Kelly, and to tell you the truth, I thought Republicans were screwed there. I thought he was going to keep that job as long as he wanted it. But he's an astronaut. He's a military officer. Show no courage. No courage at the border, no courage to do what Manchin's done 90% of the time and Kyrsten Sinema has done. He didn't even stand up for Kyrsten Sinema when she was being physically accosted. You would think that he'd do a press conference with her and say, that's not okay.
Every Republican candidate should ask Warnock. Herschel Walker should be asking Warnock, should the president run again? O'Day in Colorado should be asking Michael Bennett, should the president run again? Is his policies worthy of a second term?
That's the other one.
Every Republican candidate should be forcing their Democratic opponent to stand up to Biden or fall in line with Biden and let voters know.
Yeah, a couple of things. When we come back, I want you to hear from, I want to play Fetterman for you. A reporter got a chance to interview him for the first time since his stroke. And they have to use closed caption off a laptop in order to communicate with him because he sees the words and he doesn't understand what they mean. He needs to read or hears the words. He needs to read the words. I feel terrible for him. Mm-hmm. But if I had that problem, I couldn't do this job. They would say, Brian, yes. Best of luck. We have insurance. You can't come to work until you can speak. Right. He can't speak. And what that means for the race, what it means for Herschel's race. Tom Cotton was just down there. And a lot of people are looking at what's happening in Wisconsin's governor's races, as well as what's happening in Arizona for governor's races, and finding we're in a flat-footed tie. What will we need to push them over the finish line? We'll talk to David Avella about that. He's chairman of GOPAC. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We had a monitor set up so that he could read my questions because he still has lingering auditory processing issues as a result of the stroke. Just in some of the small talk prior to the interview before the closed captioning was up and running, it did seem that he had a hard time understanding our conversations.
That is Sasha Burns of MSNBC talking about an interview with John Fetterman. If you're thinking to yourself, this is the first one I heard in a while, you're absolutely right. He's going to do a debate in a week. Yeah, it's a week now. And he can't do any interviews. His events last 10 minutes. David Avella here from GOPAC. David, what do you think hearing that reporter from MSNBC recount what it was like talking to John Fetterman?
If you're an undecided voter at this point in the election, it's certainly going to continue to give you pause, which is why Dr. Oz is being very strategically smart by getting into those swing areas of Pennsylvania and reinforcing his image as the Dr. Oz and not the politician Oz running for office.
His words were pretty smart in saying, this is not fair to the voters. Forget about me. It's not fair to the voters. You deserve somebody representing you that can do the job. Clearly, he can't do the job. So, Fetterman, this is a little from that interview. Here's 13 seconds of it. Cut 10.
Are you soft on crime?
Of course not. I'm actually effective on crime, and I believe in second chances, and I've run on that record.
Mm. Good luck with that in Philadelphia. Oh, okay. Just one carjacking? Go back out there. Best of luck.
Yeah, the follow-up question would have been, what's one thing you've done as lieutenant governor to help bring crime down?
Nothing.
He touted his – in fact, he's made it worse by teaming up with Krasner in Philadelphia and making it so that we're not going to enforce laws. You know, and here's the other very deceitful action that many of these Dems are taking, which is they're talking – particularly these prosecuting attorneys and attorney generals – they talk about how they're bringing the crime rates down. They're bringing crime rates down because they are not enforcing laws, the lower laws.
And cops just aren't making arrests because they're not going to be processed.
And they're retiring. And we got to get moving in a different direction on this.
As a country. I wish it was those minor issues when we talk about same-sex marriage and you could talk about that and what it means for society and cultural issues. But this is a five-alarm fire happening on a regular basis. As you know, in the middle of the show today, three cops shot in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, wait, we woke up and there were two cops shot in Philadelphia. Yeah, these are three different cops. And they're about 700 cops down. They can't hire them. They were coming to New York. Now, New York can't fill up an academy. We know 1,000 cops down in New Orleans, the capital, the murder capital of the country. And you have a mayor who says it's too dangerous for a black woman to fly in coach. That's why she's got to use city funds to fly first class. And when in trouble, going to the Netherlands today. So these are moves that Democrats have to somehow rationalize.
It's a disconnect between the reality that the constituents they represent are facing every day and what they're telling people they're facing every day.
So let's get into the numbers. Fox says these power rankings. I don't know exactly how they do with the science behind it, but I'm sure it's competent. The Democrats projected to take 204 seats plus or minus 16. The GOP projected to take 231 seats plus or minus the same. 31 House races deemed toss-up. Does GOPAC have 31 races toss-up?
I think you're going to ultimately see Republicans somewhere picking up a north of 45 seats this election. Particularly,
and they're down, what, six?
Right.
Five, yeah.
Particularly you look at states like Florida, we're going to pick up congressional seats. Throughout the Midwest, we're going to pick up congressional seats, potentially two in Texas. It's going to be a strong night for McCarthy and getting a solid majority of men and women who hopefully want to get to Washington to get something done.
So the Fox News power rankings looks at the Senate. The Dems have locked in their mind 47 seats. The GOP has locked in 49 seats. Four Senate seats they have toss up. If you want to take task to this, Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, and Pennsylvania. First on Arizona, Blake Masters, I only saw clips. Evidently just steamrolled Kelly on that debate. How much does that matter?
It does matter. Proving his credibility to voters, one. But two, it goes back to, and we've talked about this, in wave elections, you don't win one competitive race. You win them all. Because it is one team is particularly motivated to go vote and the others are not. And going back to what we're talking about in the very beginning
if it's
of
close
the show.
Enough.
Yes, in close elections. That's right. And all of these are close. The team that is most motivated, who team up with independents, who get the independent vote, that's who wins. And you win big. And so whether it's Arizona, whether it's Nevada,
let's drill down on that. Adam Laxalt is not trailing almost in any poll I've seen up 2 or 3 points.
That's right.
What is your read?
Well, you add to that to underscore how well Laxalt's doing. The incumbent Democrat governor is down to the Republican nominee Lombardo. And you trickle that down, and an area that GOPAC focuses on in state legislative races as well as federal races is in competitive state legislative races. The Republican is either tied or up in three of the targeted state. So just as a state, again, it goes that trend that you don't win one competitive race, you win them all.
Herschel down by a couple of points with this controversy. What has to do you still give him a shot?
I still give him a shot. Absolutely. Warnock has to explain how voting for the Inflation Increase Act has made life better for Georgians.
Pennsylvania, Oz seems to be on a roll.
We just talked about it. I mean, Oz is smart going into the swing areas and playing the doctor, not the politician.
Thank you.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Do you think Democrats have something to run on?
Oh, I think we do. I know we do. And here's the contrast. We know it. What's the Republican platform? What are they running on? What are they for? They want to put Social Security on the chopping block every 5 years, and the other leader comes along and says, no, every year it should be up for grabs. Medicare, Medicaid. And the first thing they said they're going to do is get rid of the Inflation Reduction Act. I mean, I don't know what they're for.
That is Joe Biden doing what politicians do. The other side has nothing. They're not running on anything. I could give you a litany on things Republicans claim to be running on, and I think Joe Biden knows it. He wants to focus on what Rick Scott said, and that is Rick Scott, one of the things he did, much to the chagrin of many in his party, he put on paper that non-discretionary spending needs to be examined, and that, of course, would be Medicare and Medicaid, which is a third rail for seniors and seniors vote. Rich Lowry knows all about this, editor of National Review, author of A Case for Nationalism. Hey, Rich, do Republicans have anything to run on?
They have, first of all, stopping what's going on. And yeah, you're right. Biden wants to run against Rick Scott. A couple wayward ideas in this, I don't know, he had a list of like 200 ideas or so. And one of them is looking at Social Security every 5 years, whatever it is, which seems reasonable to me. But of course, Democrats have been demagoguing on Social Security and Medicare for about 50 years. So that's what their reflex is. But that's not a major issue anywhere, right? I mean, it's the economy, it's inflation, it's crime, and then down the list is abortion. And that's the main thing they've been trying to make hay on. It's the main thing they're going to at the end here. Stacey Abrams has been trying to do it to regain her footing. Yes, Brian Kemp doesn't appear to be working. It's what Mandela Barnes is going to in Wisconsin. We'll see. That one's kind of close. But it's rare to have Ron Johnson ahead in any polls, and he's been leading, you know, the last five or six polls. So that one's actually looking pretty good for Johnson. So, no, they don't have a lot to run on, the Democrats, not at all.
Today we see the inflation rates at 8.5%, so it's higher than they thought. It's getting closer to 9 instead of closer to 7, and people feel that on a regular basis. Some staggering numbers about people that have to skip paying their bills, according to some surveys, are having trouble doing it. And that is, they don't wait for the economic data on Thursday and Friday, Rich. These are everyday people.
Yeah, you don't need the official statistics to tell you what's going on. I was in a local shop last week here outside of New York City, and they just said our prices are the highest they've ever been through this entire inflationary episode. So I don't think they're abating. You know, it's food prices have been driving a lot of it, and that's just a direct hit at every single American family. And inflation erodes wages, right? It makes your paycheck worth less, and people feel that, and that's why it's right up there with the economy as the top issue of this campaign.
So we understand, too, I was looking at what Jamie Dimon said, and I mentioned this to David Avello, who's just here. Jamie Dimon is, to me, he leans left. Pretty obvious. He went out of his way after a couple of meetings just to be against the Trump administration. But he came out and said the administration made a huge mistake when this war started, not upping the oil and gas production. We are a swing oil producer. We should not be asking Saudi Arabia for anything. So that is the man who is chairman of the number one bank in the country.
Yep.
Should that resonate? And when people are looking for real answers, not political answers?
Of course, yeah. And the idea also that we're going to punish Saudi Arabia. The best way to get leverage over Saudi Arabia is to pump more oil and gas here at home, right? And that's the one thing they won't do because they have this quasi-religious commitment to fighting climate change, which means fossil fuels got to go. So even though this has been, you know, one of the main things eating away his political standing, he hasn't reversed on it, and he likely won't reverse on it. This is just a deep-seated moral commitment, although misbegotten one on the part of the Democrats.
And what you bring up, too, is this new push with Senator Menendez, with Senator Dick Durbin, to punish Saudi Arabia for for cutting back 2 million barrels of oil production a day. Can we just, Menendez, who's been on the foreign policy committee for what, 10, 20 years, mm-hmm. who knows that the Iranian deal is a bad deal, you leave Saudi Arabia, in comes China, and unless you're going to back Iran, you really have no choice. They know that, and to talk in a blusterous way about the evils of Saudi Arabia is to also understand this horrible nation called Israel, and I'm being sarcastic, says, I could deal with Saudi Arabia. We're exchanging economic values and programs. We're flying back and forth. They actually set the table for the Abraham Accords. So to act in a blustery have a blustery temper tantrum right now is just dumb.
Yeah, so I have no use for the Saudis. We should have no illusions for the Saudis. This is a nasty
transactional relationship.
Yeah, but it's just realpolitik. They're better than the alternative in the region, right? So if you're not going to go with the Saudis, you have to go with the Iranians, and that would be insane. And then they're hugely influential, and they're sitting on a lot of oil. So if you want them to pump more, you need to be really friendly to them. And this is the bizarre thing. You could either just pump our own oil and be independent and maybe be down on Saudi Arabia, or if you're not going to pump our own, then you have to go hat in hand in Saudi Arabia and be really, really nice to them. And Biden's done neither of these things, right? He won't pump our own oil, and he's not going to kowtow to the Saudis and said all these things about how they're going to be a rogue state. And it just doesn't add up, and it creates the kind of debacle we're seeing, that it's bad for our standing around the world. It's bad for ordinary people here at home. It's just a debacle all around.
So I'm watching Special Report last night, and I know people are a little dizzy about this, but really for the last 4 years— and I was wondering what was really going on. This whole Russia hoax is even worse than anyone thought. And when people talk about things that were wrong with the election, forget about voting machines and forget about pickup trucks that drop off ballots or leave them under the table. That doesn't matter. No one could ever prove anything. Forget it. But if you want to know what affected the election, you could say that Hunter Biden laptop being suppressed, and you could say it's 50-plus intel officials say it's classic Russian disinformation. And that all of a sudden gave Facebook and others a reason to sideline it. So this story never got out. So yesterday, a former CIA officer joined Brett Baer, who signed the letter, this intel officer. They asked some questions about the threat behind Ukraine and what Vladimir Putin's, how his stability is. And here he is. Brett asked him to justify him writing a letter, because the New York Times and Washington Post and New York Post all agree, looking at the forensic, the laptop was real, the interactions were real, the business relationship that means that Joe Biden had exists now in the White House. Here's David Press, Priest, going at it with Brett Baer, Cut 34.
Do you regret signing onto the letter?
Oh, absolutely not, because those words are still true.
Do you think
it has all the classic earmarks?
Of an election?
Oh, absolutely not. No, this
even
is.
Even though it wasn't true.
No.
It had the classic earmarks, but it wasn't true.
What is not true?
That it was Russian disinformation.
That's not what we said in the letter. Read the actual letter, and we said we do not know if this is Russian disinformation.
It has
right?
all the classic earmarks of a Russian information operation.
Exactly. The difference between an information campaign and a disinformation campaign
not get to candidate
and a
Joe
misinformation
Biden.
Campaign. It's not my fault if people don't look up definitions.
Is he?
Oh, my God.
I mean, what do you think? But first off, your take on that exchange.
Well, look, I mean, they did write it in a squirrely way. They didn't actually say it was Russian disinformation, but it was written clearly to lead everyone to conclude that and have all the reporting on the letter saying that's what they were asserting. So his defense just gets to the central dishonesty of the whole thing. And there was no reason they needed to write that letter except for to try to bail Joe Biden out and try to suppress discussion of the laptop. So it had all the earmarks of a classic political operation that these people as intelligence professionals shouldn't have been within 100 miles of it. And I've said repeatedly, this should be one of the top things that Republicans investigate when they take the House. Why did people sign on the letter? Who organized it? And what, you know, getting to the bottom to the extent we can of the suppression effort around a totally legitimate, highly significant political story that was just inconvenient to Joe Biden and near the election. So he had everyone falling into place to try to keep people from learning about it.
And that's what the 2020, if you were President Trump and you're going to be on the stump, forget about the Rudy Giuliani farcical cases. What you do is you bring up these things that happened leading up to this election that prevented the American people from having everything they needed to make the vote that was necessary to vote for the candidate who would be best for the job. And you can't say that 74 million people, it's not that he had no support. It's not that he was Walter Mondale. Hey, Mr. President, you lost 49 states. You know, you had 74 million votes and you came within 2,300 of taking Arizona, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. So that's the issue. And forget about this whole the election was stolen. No, you had the intel agencies working against you. Do you realize, I was thinking about this, Rich, that all these intel experts were duped by a crackhead sexual addict that dropped off a laptop at an independent computer repair shop. They were duped by this. This is classic Russian disinformation or a crackhead son of a presidential candidate. Either one showed great sophistication. Is there any difference?
Yeah, well, they wanted to be duped. I mean, that's the fundamental thing, right? They didn't care what the truth was. And sure, you know, when I first heard about the laptop, it had been, you know, shows up at this repair shop. Yeah, you want to kick the tires on that story. You don't want to immediately say, oh, this is 100% accurate. But you don't immediately go the other way and say it must be Russian disinformation, which is, again, the impression they wanted to make with that letter. And then, you know, after you kick the tires, it's pretty clear it was legit and certainly should have been a matter of discussion and debate, which Twitter and all the rest of them didn't want, which is fundamentally un-American and unfair.
And these people should be ruined for that. Michael Hayden, who I was a fan of, I don't know what happened to him. He got Trump syndrome. John Brennan is disgraced every day he opens up his mouth. Everybody on there, they should not be looked at the same, some of which are friends of the show. But you actually signed, Leon Panetta, former CIA director, mm-hmm. you signed on to something without even making a phone call to find out, hey, David Archer, this is Leon Panetta. You are a partner of Hunter Biden. Yes. We're looking at emails to correspondents. I'm just wondering, was that you? And when Leon Panetta, who's a Democrat, calls up David Archer, a friend of the Bidens, he would pick up the phone. And then you mm-hmm. call up a few others and say, is that you? And they go, after a while, I say, oh, listen, it might be classic Russian disinformation, but the emails look real. The people, I actually got them on the phone, and they actually admitted. And then you have the CIA go up to Hunter Biden under threat of perjury. Is this real? Is this correspondence effective? Is this email to you? Is this your voice leaving a message for your father? Is that your father's voice leaving a message for you? So no one even did that. I mean, yeah. And I never went to, I don't think, I got to check my resume. I don't think I went to Langley for CIA school.
Yeah, I don't know who the guy was on Special Report, David Press or Prest or whatever his name is. But Leon Panetta, I mean, this is a serious guy. You know, this is a graybeard who's been at the highest levels of multiple administrations. And to have him go in for this, what basically was a disinformation operation, that letter, is really disappointing.
And, Rich, I want to bring you to one more thing that I just seen to be examined. And that is what's going on with the Durham report. And they have this Dushenko character who was from Russia, was a source for the Steele dossier, and actually was on the payroll of the FBI. He is now being tried for lying. And they backed up this story. This was backed up by a guy that was knee deep in the Hunter Biden investigation, that they, after the Steele dossier was given to the FBI, they gave Steele $1 million to prove it. What? You took taxpayer dollars, $1 million, to prove that Christopher Steele, the report that he handed in, was real because we can't figure it out. Excuse me? You got hired by the Hillary Clinton camp to go get dirt on Donald Trump, and now you're going to give him $1 million to find out if the dirt was true? And then when you find out that he can't, you still use it to get FISA applications. And then one thing that says, well, we still didn't go for Papadopoulos. Oh, but you did go for the other guy, Carter Page. And you did continue this farce and hire Robert Mueller as a special counselor for 2.5 years at the cost of something like $30 million.
Your government at work. Yeah. I mean, the $1 million detail is just amazing. Look, you needed to, you know, as I was saying, the laptop, you'd want to kick the tires. You kick the tires on the dossier, it immediately falls apart.
Yeah.
You know, it's a jalopy, rusted out jalopy. And any competent FBI agent would have been known within like 24 hours, like some Google searches, that there are things in there that didn't add up, besides just the facial implausibility of the whole thing. And that they spent more money trying to check it out, that to the guy who created the falsehood in the first place, and then dragged the country through this years-long drama. It's hard to take.
And just factor this in: 6'9" James Comey at Trump Tower. Mr. President, do you have a second? Yes. We got this dossier. It's out there. I just don't know if it's true or not. And mm-hmm. I just want to tell you about it, causing the distrust between those two forever. Seeing his reaction and then chronicling it in the limo outside, that continued to build like a tornado until the point is America was distracted, and maybe the cause of additional unrest with Russia that can never be repaired. And I'm not saying Russia is an evil regime, but we were coexisting. This put it over the top.
Yeah, and once you brief the president about it also, that creates the predicate for the media reporting about it. And Comey, you know, whatever else you're saying about him, he's not an idiot, and he played this very cleverly for his purposes, and he was one of the prime movers behind the whole hoax and the whole years-long drama.
And he deserves the tar that goes along with it now. Rich Lowry, The National Review. Thanks, Rich.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
All right, I'm going to come back. I'm going to try to squeeze in some calls, 1-866-408-7669.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Should the American people prepare for a recession?
No. Look, they've been saying this now how every 6 months they say this. Every 6 months they look down the next 6 months and see what's going to happen. It hadn't happened yet. There's no guarantee that there's going to be. I don't think there will be a recession. If it is, it'll be a very slight recession.
Let me say something. You have two quarters of negative growth. A lot of people think it arrived. Then when you have an inflation 8.5%, a lot of people feel it arrived. When you have unemployment, great. I'm so glad it's low, but ticking up. A lot of people say it's arrived. When they find out that 66 out of every 10 listening to me right now are living paycheck to paycheck. The people feel it arrived. That's why Jake Tapper usually does a pretty decent job doing an interview, gave him layup after layup, and I thought the biggest layup was the biggest disappointment. Tony Bobulinski actually called Jake Tapper out and said, Jake, call me. I will tell you the real story about how the big guy, Joe Biden, is involved with Hunter Biden's finance deals with other countries. But instead, when he brings up Hunter Biden, it is one question, and it's the easiest question in the world for him to answer, and that is, my son's an addict, and he's not anymore, 32.
By the way, this thing about a gun, I didn't know anything about it, but turns out that when he made my application to purchase a gun, what happened was you get asked the question, are you on drugs, you use drugs? He said no, and he wrote about saying no in his book, so... I've got confidence in my son. I love him, and he's on the straight and narrow, and he has been for a couple of years now.
And he went
and
on.
I'm just so proud of him.
He went on to say, like many families have had this happen, you get hooked on drugs. He's overcame it. He's established a life. He is. I'm confident that he is what he says he is, and does are consistent with what happens. That's his manic. That's his idea of saying his son was once a drug addict. Now, by the way, if you are truly a drug addict, you never think you're cured. You never think you're over it. Say he's no longer using drugs for now. He wrote a book about it. He's not running from it. And the big question would be, what about the finance deals that implicate you, Mr. President?
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. This hour, we're going to be joined by Senator Tom Cotton, Martha McCallum, Bill Hemmer. We'll then blast into our studio, and this hour will fly by. The number to call to talk to all of us, I see up there, 1-866-408-7669. You can always get the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Also, it's official. Brandon, Mississippi as well, be live on stage. I want to catch all of you there, especially if you're streaming. You're not in our family of affiliates, VIP opportunities I can meet and talk to you about. The history books, including The President and Freedom Fighter, which is coming out on paperback on the 25th of October, brand new stuff in it. Be able to talk about what's happening in the news and what happened in our past. And then in Tulsa, Oklahoma, KRMG listeners on Sunday, November 13th and December 2nd in Newark, New Jersey. Beautiful theater out there in Newark. That'll be on a Friday night, December 2nd. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Look what I've gotten done. Name me a president in recent history that's gotten as much done as I have in the first 2 years. Not a joke.
Oh, you got stuff done, but is it good? That's the key. Biden speaks, president sits down, 15 minutes with CNN. He needs note cards. We'll talk about it.
Number two.
As of this morning, there were 28 missiles, of which 20 were shot down, and shot down two terrorist cruise missiles with the help of Stinger man pads. One person saved dozens of lives. Thank you for that.
It's coming to a head. The G7 gets together, shows they're backing for Ukraine. They want a missile defense system. Germany and the U.S. supposed to help. How does this thing end? Zelensky says, no chance of me talking to Vladimir Putin. I don't think he wants to talk to you.
Number one.
From my perspective in the House, it suggests it's not a question of whether Republicans win, but how big McCarthy's margin is in the end. In the Senate, that's still going to be tougher, and that's going to come down to some of the problems the Republicans created for themselves.
That is Kimberly Strassel, because she does not think Republicans put the strongest candidates out there. I have no problem with rookie candidates. Midterms, race by race, issue by issue, and what the Fox Power Meter says now about Senate and House should the election be today. Let's bring in Senator Tom Cotton, who spent yesterday with Herschel Walker in Georgia. Welcome back, Senator.
Hey, Brian. It's good to be back on the show with you.
Well, how did it go yesterday?
Oh, it was a great campaign rally in western Georgia, a Republican stronghold, where Herschel Walker is going to have a huge turnout because the people of Georgia know that a vote for Raphael Warnock is a vote for Joe Biden. Raphael Warnock votes with Joe Biden 96% of the time. He's voted for trillions of dollars of spending, which has caused record high inflation. He's voted to throttle American oil and gas production, which is why we have such high gas prices. He's voted to go soft on criminals, which is why we have a crime wave all across our country. So on issue after issue, Raphael Warnock, who campaigned with puppies a couple of years ago, has turned out to be a lapdog for Joe Biden. Herschel Walker will be a bulldog for the people of Georgia.
How is he handling the controversy and the allegations about abortions he may or may not have paid for?
You know, Brian, Herschel has been very upfront with the people of Georgia for a long time that he is an imperfect, flawed person, as we all are. Herschel found God many years ago. He's been redeemed and saved by grace. And, you know, people in his life that he's hurt as well, like his ex-wife, have now accepted his apologies. He's done right by them. They fully support him in this race. So I think Herschel is a great redemption story for the people of Georgia. And in particular, if you read his autobiography, the struggles he had with mental health, which caused some of the problems earlier in his life, allows him to see exactly what families are struggling with when they face someone with a mental health challenge or perhaps with an addiction challenge, which again will allow him to be a strong voice for the people of Georgia. On the abortion question more broadly, Brian, you know, in all my campaigns across the country, obviously the Democrats are trying to dial it up to 11 on abortion. Speculating about what Republican majorities might do as a hypothetical, but we don't have to speculate about them, Brian. We know exactly what they would do, because they all voted for a bill earlier this year that would mandate every single state allow partial birth abortion up to the moment of birth and would force you to pay for it with your tax dollars. The Democrats are the true radicals when it comes to abortion.
I want you to hear what Lindsey Graham said, because it's about two or three points either way. Herschel Walker's up or down. And then you had this controversy, and Warnock stayed quiet. Why? Because there's a domestic abuse allegation against him. There's a lack of child support allegation against him. There's all types of controversy. This is, you know, Senator Lindsey Graham, like you, Senator Cotton, said a lot of success campaigning in the South. Cut 18.
Here's Herschel's problem. He's being outspent 3-1. He needs to run ads talking about Warnock voting against border security and increasing the IRS by 87,000 votes. He needs to run ads telling the people in Georgia that Warnock has shut down domestic oil and gas production in the United States, making us more dependent on foreign oil and gas. And he also needs to tell the story about the double standard here. This October surprise against Herschel, you think that's an accident? They waited this long to drop it right before the election. So here's what you can do to help Herschel Walker and to help your own family. If you live in Georgia, vote for Herschel. Tell your friends to vote for Herschel. If you don't have a friend, go make one. If you don't live in Georgia, you can tell people you know in Georgia to vote for Herschel.
So he just get down, get dirty. Is there that type of hustle in the Herschel camp?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. From what I saw yesterday, Brian, what I've seen from Herschel and his team all year long, he's working at it like it's final game of football season and playoff berth is on the line. Lindsey is right. If you live in Georgia, don't just vote for Herschel. But as I said yesterday, the most important advertisement is not what you see on TV. It's you talking to your family and your friends and your coworkers, anyone who trusts your judgment and your opinion and saying, I'm for Herschel. Here's why, and I hope you will be too. And Lindsay laid out the case why, that Raphael Warnock's been a rubber stamp for Joe Biden. He's voted against securing our border. He's voted to hire 87,000 new IRS agents as opposed to the Border Patrol agents we need at the border. He's voted against cracking down on fentanyl smugglers. He's voted for trillions of dollars of new spending that has caused this record high inflation. If you want to change, if you want to break on the Biden's Democrats agenda, then vote for Herschel Walker. If you're not in Georgia, then maybe think about sending him a few dollars so he can communicate to those voters who will make the difference.
So you talk about communicating. I've never seen anything quite like it. John Fetterman barely does 15-minute appearances, does almost no interviews, will only agree to one debate, and needs closed captioning because he can't understand what people say, but he can understand what they by reading. Feel bad for him, but is he capable of being senator? Listen to what was on MSNBC last night. This Dasha Burns was able to do an interview with him, and this is what she observed. Cut six.
We had a monitor set up so that he could read my questions because he still has lingering auditory processing issues as a result of the stroke. Just in some of the small talk prior to the interview, before the closed captioning was up and running, it did seem that he had a hard time understanding our conversations.
I mean, that's unbelievable. In the Senate, you're an experienced senator. Do you need to understand when people talk, and do you need to be able to talk?
Well, Brian, first off, let me say I wish Mr. Fetterman very well and a full recovery. I wouldn't wish what's happened to him on anyone, and I'm sorry that it happened to him. And I do hope he makes a full recovery. But I want to make 2 points about John Fetterman. First, is that irrespective of where his condition is now and where it's going, it's plain now that he misrepresented to the people of Pennsylvania over the summer the severity of his condition. It is very hard to work in the Senate if you cannot have a discreet private conversation, you know, on the Senate floor or in someone's office. He may be able to use closed captioning at hearings and other public events, but a lot of work happens behind the scenes, and John Fetterman misrepresented the severity of his condition to the Pennsylvania voters. I wonder what else he may be misrepresenting to them. And second, his recovery and the pace of it is the least of my concerns about John Fetterman for Pennsylvanians. I'm much more concerned about his radical record, especially his record on crime. He has a history as a member of the Clemency Board in Pennsylvania of voting to let serious violent felons out of prison early. And just think about this, Brian. He was asked once, what would he do if he could have a magic wand? What's one thing? And it wasn't to reduce inflation. It wasn't to close the border. It wasn't to end the fentanyl epidemic that's killing so many Pennsylvanians. It wasn't even to find a quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers so they could start winning some games. It was to end long sentences for murderers. That's where his priorities are. That's not the priority of the Pennsylvania voters. That's why they're going to elect them at odds in November.
Yeah, I mean, nothing against anyone with a stroke, but if I had a stroke, I couldn't do my job. I'm not saying I wouldn't get benefits and Fox wouldn't have like compassion, but I just couldn't do it. You know, Tom, you'd be senator, you'd be filling in for me. And until I recovered.
There's no one who can fill in for you, Kilmeade.
An Ivy League education with an infantry background with a session in Congress and 2 terms as a senator, I think you're qualified. I want to talk to you about Ukraine. It seems to me that Vladimir Putin's inner circle is closing, and his barrage of rockets, while devastating and cruel, to me shows a little bit of desperation because he cannot win on the battlefield. You fought in close contact. You learned to fight in the infantry. The Ukrainians are destroying the Russians in face-to-face contact. The Russians are not committed to this fight. Here is Vladimir Zelensky on what he is seeing so far. Cut 22.
As of this morning, there were 28 missiles, of which 20 were shot down. More than 15 drones, almost all of them are Iranian combat drones. Most were shot down. On October 10, Dmytro Shumsky showed excellent skills and the reaction shot and shot down 2 terrorist cruise missiles with the help of Stinger man pads. One person saved dozens of lives. Thank you for that.
They want a missile defense system. We said that we're going to get him there, and said Germany is supposed to help. And we are going to, it looks like, according to the Wall Street Journal, green light something that goes beyond what the HIMARS will do in the field of battle. What do you know?
Well, Brian, the missile attacks on civilian targets this week have been another barbaric action by Vladimir Putin. I can tell you that the action, though, that matters from a strategic standpoint is what you cited at the beginning. It's the frontline infantry and artillery troops in eastern and southern Ukraine who are retaking vital territory. These barbaric missile attacks, as gruesome as they are, and as despite the loss of life they've caused, are not going to have a strategic impact on the war. If anything, they will simply further deepen Ukrainian resolve, if that's possible, against Vladimir Putin and against this invasion. If this is the new phase of war, though, then no question the West needs to provide more air defense systems to Ukraine so they can protect civilian population centers. These are not escalatory, as the Biden administration often worries about. They're not offensive weapons. They're simply designed to protect civilian population centers, just like we help our allies around the world in South Korea and Japan and the Middle East protect against missile strikes as well. And frankly, European governments need to do more to provide those kind of systems as well. The way to end this war is to back Ukraine to the hilt so they can get Russian troops off of Ukrainian soil.
There's a lot of Republicans who don't want to do this anymore. Say, you know, we have so many needs here. We're $32 trillion in debt. We're giving money out. We're not following through and making sure and giving out arms and making sure that it's getting where it's supposed to. We hope it is, but there's no follow through with it. What do you say to people that are saying that I'm not sure we should be in this conflict?
Well, the reason this conflict started is Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine because he's always wanted to reclaim Ukraine for the greater Russian empire. It's not anything the United States did. We're not fighting this war. We are simply enabling the Ukrainians to fight a war for their own soil. As Churchill wrote, it is the primary right of any people to fight and to die, and especially to kill, to defend their own land. And the best way to bring peace to Ukraine and reestablish peace and deterrence in Europe is to allow Ukraine to defend its own territory. When you see the news about how much money is being spent in Ukraine, remember, that's not simply spending money or giving Ukraine money to spend. It is mostly the in-kind value of the rockets and the artillery and the other weapon systems that we're providing them, most of which is made here in the United States, much of which is being bought here with those tax dollars to help provide good, high-paying American manufacturing jobs in our defense industry, like the workers in South Arkansas who have been working overtime for 10 months to ensure that Ukraine has the munitions they need and to backfill the munitions we need.
Is the backfilling going on? There's concerns of Oliver North and others that it's not being done, that when we're emptying our coffers, we're not refilling them. Do you know for sure it's being refilled?
So it's not going fast enough, Brian. That's why I proposed legislation to substantially increase spending on America's munitions. What we need is certainty in the order allotments and the appropriations for these companies that make systems like the Javelin or like the HIMARS system or like the shells that go in those artillery systems. These are not, I mean, they're advanced weapons, don't get me wrong, but they're not a stealth fighter. They're not an aircraft carrier. They don't take years to make. They can be made with a strong enough commitment of resolve, both the money that we spend for ourselves and our foreign partners who want to invest in them, that these companies can open up a new production line or they can run a third shift on the production line. We do need to substantially increase our rate of production of these kinds of weapons, and we can if we show the resolve and commitment to do so.
All right. Stay on top of it, Senator. I know you will. Senator Tom Cotton, helping out Herschel Walker as there's a sprint now, 27 days till midterm election day. Senator, thank you.
Thank you, Ryan.
You got it. When we come back, Martha McCallum, then I'm going to welcome in Bill Hemmer, and we'll see if they'll talk to each other.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, Martha, I went a little long with my last guest, Senator Tom Cotton, who spent yesterday with Herschel Walker. Then we have Hemmer Barber.
I am sorry that I missed that.
I'm going to get you the tape.
I would like to ask you a little bit about that, actually.
He said that he was on message, that Herschel made mistakes and in the past.
What did Tom Cotton say about the face that his face sort of dropped when Herschel Walker started talking about the cows all getting pregnant?
I didn't see that part. He talked about cows getting pregnant?
Herschel Walker? Yes, he did.
Right.
He told a joke about how he said, I always tell this story about the cows. Then the bull is out in the field and there's three cows out there that are already pregnant. So he wants to jump over the fence and try to find the ones that are on the other side of the fence. And Tom Cotton's face kind of went. I'm not really sure this is exactly right. The direction that you want to be going in at this particular moment in your race. So, yeah, people have jumped all over it in other places. You know, he says it's just a funny story that he tells, but might not be the best funny story that he might want to be discussing.
You know what?
We'll pull it at this moment.
Right around there. I just think it's probably a 2 or 3 point race at this moment, don't you think?
I think so. I think that people in Georgia, you know, I think that the well runs deep for him in Georgia. I think people love him. And I think that Warnock has issues of his own in his race that are of a similar nature. You know, it's really just a question of whether or not. I think the one thing you can absolutely say about Herschel Walker is that he, you know, he is who he is.
Yes.
And he doesn't run away from it. And he says, now you've awoken the grizzly bear and I'm going to fight, you know,
right.
Just like I did on the gridiron. So we'll see what happens. I have no idea. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's a tight race and it could go either way. We'll see.
Martha sticks around.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So what's your message to Democrats who like you, who like what you've done, but are concerned about your age and the demands of the job?
Well, they're concerned about whether or not I can get anything done. Look what I've gotten done. Name me a president in recent history that's gotten as much done as I have in the first 2 years. Not a joke. And so I just think there's a, you know, it's a matter of, has anybody done more in the first 2 years of their administration for a guy who was, they've been saying this about my age for since I began to run.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you can come work out with me in the morning.
Right. So Joe Biden, I think 70% of the country is concerned about some of his cognitive issues, including 52% of Democrats. That's a study that was out this week. Martha McCallum and Bill Hemmer back together.
Hey, bud, what's happening? It's been a couple
it's American
weeks.
Newsroom reunion tour.
Yeah.
Do you guys have reunion shows?
We have done a few.
We could do it on Fox Nation.
And whenever I can, I invite Bill to come on the story with me in the afternoon, and I do his show every Wednesday morning. So,
Who's been on the show? Who's been on the America's Newsroom? Yeah, you and Dana.
Who's
Prager.
Been on it?
Yeah.
Martha comes on every week.
Oh, gosh. No, you mean like...
The anchors, former anchors.
Oh. You want the lineup?
Yep.
Dana Perino.
Right, currently.
In reverse order?
Yeah.
Shannon Bruce.
Not miss anybody.
Sandra Smith.
Yes.
Martha McCallum.
Yes.
I think there was a short spell with Allison Camerota.
Really?
Maybe not. That was at noon. Sorry. I did her show at noon.
Oh, right.
And there was Megyn Kelly. And
you and Megyn Kelly was the first,
yeah.
Wasn't she?
I don't think I missed anybody.
It's a rock star lineup.
It is. What a reunion
Bill,
show that was.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic lineup.
And only one man can handle it.
We would crush
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Only one man can handle it.
We would crush Family Feud.
Yeah, no question about it.
Oh,
right,
man.
Bill, you wouldn't have to do anything. It would never get to you. You'd be the end of the line. You're like, no, we won.
That would be hilarious.
So we're just hearing Jake Tapper talk to the President of the United States, and I thought, wow, I have a sense that Tapper wants this job, and if CNN was going to change their mission and be more balanced, and him to be the representative of that, who's given some tougher interviews to Democrats of late, this might be the moment. That wasn't the interview.
Yeah.
What was omitted? I mean, the border is obvious.
Right.
Never came up.
How about the Hunter Biden question?
See, we were just talking about this. Yeah. And I think the problem with the Hunter Biden question is that it only went to the first part, because there isn't an American human being who can't sympathize with someone who has a family member who has a drug problem or an addiction problem, right? That's part A. The problem is not that. That is a understandable human condition. The problem is that while he was doing drugs and, you know, possessing an illegal weapon because he was doing drugs and shouldn't have had it in his possession, he was traveling on presidential aircraft to China and Ukraine to do business deals with high-ranking officials whose businesses were intertwined with the government of those countries. So that is the problem, okay? So you have to then press and say, yes, sir, I know you've said that you didn't know anything about your son's businesses.
Let's just hear it, just in case you miss CNN 33.
I'm proud of my son. This is a kid who got, not a kid, he's a grown man. He got hooked on, like many families have had happen, hooked on drugs. He's overcome that. He's established a new life. He is, I'm confident that he is, what he says and does are consistent with what happens.
Okay, I'm sure that last line's interesting. But that was the biggest layup. That way, not only did he ask a question, he asked not only an easy question, a question that made him look sympathetic as opposed to what we really care about. And that is what Hunter did with the big guy involved. Tony Bobulinski said to Bill, Tony Bobulinski said, Jake Tapper, call me at the end of the Hunter, at the end of the Tucker Carlson interview.
I think we all do these interviews where we look back and we think, man, I should have asked that. Or I didn't have time to get to this.
Sure.
And there's a level of regret that you always have in hindsight. Would you agree?
Always.
Absolutely, always. There's always something.
There's always something. I mean, for my money, I would have said, who's the big guy?
Yeah. Are you the big guy?
Are you the big guy?
Tony Bobulinski says he met with you three or four times.
I don't even need all that stuff.
Yeah.
You're the big guy.
I don't know what you're talking about. He'd say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. He would say that. He would say, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, then, sir, was there any agreement after you were going to leave office to have a piece of this company or this business? You know, and if he says, I don't know. It's interesting, even in that answer, and I don't have it in front of me, but he kind of backpedals about what he knows and doesn't know about gun laws.
You know? You want to hear that?
He goes, well, I guess you have. Go ahead.
Cut 32.
By the way, this thing about a gun, I didn't know anything about it, but turns out that when he made my application to purchase a gun, what happened was you get asked the question, are you on drugs? You use drugs? He said no. And he wrote about saying no in his book. So I've got confidence in my son. I love him. And he's on the straight and narrow, and he has been for a couple of years now. And I'm just so proud of him.
Look, if he's my son, I'm going to say that too.
Of course.
I don't begrudge him defending his son. I'm sure he's had a difficult time. But you could have said, are you the big guy?
We all glad he's better.
I don't know what Jake was going for. You know, I wasn't there. But I know what I would have inserted. Martha, I think you know what you would have inserted.
Absolutely. It's the natural follow-up there. Because the issue, as I said, is not a family member who had a drug problem and is now better. Everyone is glad that this man is doing better now. The problem is, while he was so addicted, and we've seen the videos, we know that he was a mess. He was also doing business deals with Ukraine and China while his father was the vice president. That is the issue. That's the issue. And does any of that color the president's opinions about how he handles these countries in any way? That's the issue.
Well said.
So I want to bring up something else. Brett Baer. Well, let's bring up this. There's two issues I'd like to bring up. One, Brett Baer finally talked to one of the CIA, the intelligence officials that signed off saying that Hunter Biden's laptop was indeed Russian disinformation. He has since changed that in a sparring session last night, after first getting his take on Ukraine and how much danger Vladimir Putin may be in. They went over to the fact that this guy, Bill Press, Priest, signed off that the Hunter Biden laptop, now proven, we knew it, but the New York Times and Washington Post both agreed that their experts concur that was legitimately Hunter Biden's laptop, and so was the contents legitimate. Why did you sign off on a letter that says classic Russian disinformation? Cut 34.
Do you regret signing on to the letter?
Oh, absolutely not, because those words are still true.
Do you think
it has all the classic earmarks?
Of an election?
Oh, absolutely not. No,
this even
is.
Even though it wasn't true.
No.
It had the classic earmarks, but it wasn't true.
What is not true?
That it was Russian disinformation.
That's not what we said in the letter. Read the actual letter, and we said we do not know if this is Russian disinformation.
It has right? all the classic earmarks of a Russian information operation.
Exactly. The I difference between an information campaign and a disinformation campaign
did not get to candidate
and a
Joe
misinformation
Biden.
Campaign. It's Hold not on. My fault the if people don't look up definitions.
It's a couple of things here. I mean, I'm glad he said yes to coming on the program. I think Brett's team has been looking for a long time for a lot of people who signed that letter, and I think he might be the first person who said yes. I think after yesterday, no one else will agree to an interview. My understanding is that that gentleman is not even a Russian expert, and he signed a letter that said this is Russian disinformation.
Classic.
It's just...
He also wrote a book called How to Get Rid of a President, History's Guide to Removing.
Did not know that.
To removing unpopular, unable, or unfit chief executives in 2018.
Talk about follow-up questions.
Well right. done. Well done. One.
So, yeah, here's a little more. Cut 36.
What we were trying to do is point out that this has all the classic earmarks of a Russian information campaign, not to say it's Russian disinformation, but to say that the propagation through American media and international media has all the classic earmarks of a Russian information campaign, because we've seen it over and over and over again. They love to sow these kind of divisions and exacerbate them. That's not American. That's Russian.
I got you.
Yeah.
But it ended up being a Biden information campaign because he used it in the campaign and in that debate.
I encourage you to ask him about that.
And I will.
So he was duped. So all these intel officials were duped by a crackhead who dropped a laptop over at an independent computer repair shop. And I'm just saying, from my perspective, couldn't you have called David Archer, his business partner, directly? Before I put my name on something and my reputation on the line, would you have all those person would have picked up for a Democrat. Hey, Leon Panetta signed that letter. Leon Panetta, you don't think you could get Hunter Biden on the phone? You don't think you can get any of these people on the phone? I just want to know, is this real? Is this your daughter? Hunter, is this your daughter? And then you tell the FBI, I can't sign this.
Absolutely.
And the story becomes Leon Panetta would not sign on it.
And what about the fact that from day one, no one in the Biden camp ever said, that's not my laptop?
No,
never.
No.
They never denied that it was his laptop.
He says, the truth
and
is, I don't
know. And if it wasn't his laptop, you better believe they would have been screaming that from the mountaintop. That is not his laptop. But they never said that. So it's almost... you know, on a sort of simple level, it's like, why should we trust these intelligence officials who are willing to do so little homework before they're willing to put their name on something? They're not really great investigators, it would appear.
Yeah, they're political operatives.
Absolutely.
So what emerged yesterday from the Durham trial? What emerged yesterday was opening arguments on both sides for Dushenko. Yeah. In what way is it extraordinary, Bill?
Well, I mean, there was a witness who testified that basically the FBI offered $1 million to him if he could prove the information on the dossier. And he didn't take the $1 million because he couldn't prove the information. But yet they still took it and dropped it into the case for a running presidential candidate several weeks from a presidential election. I would just
2016.
Say, if 2016, correct. If they can do that to Donald Trump or to anyone, they can drop this into the case file of any American today.
I agree. This is a huge story. And also, let me just remind everyone what we just said. This is October of 2016. This is weeks before the election. Now, also keep in mind that John Durham is not sitting behind at the bench. John Durham gets up out of his chair. This is my guy, Brian Auten. I'm going to question him personally. So Durham did this examination himself. He took this guy through all these questions, said, yes, we offered. And the analogy I used before when you and I were talking, Brian, is let's say you're a reporter and you go to your editor. You say, I've got a huge, huge story here, but I only have this one source and I'm not sure it's actually accurate. You're going to say, all right, go back, get me two sources to confirm that, three sources to nail it down. In this case, they said, we will pay you $1 million to give us a good source. Okay. And then I'm the editor. I'm going to run with it. Why would I do that? Because I have a serious bent, a serious agenda. I need this. Then he doesn't do it. And they go to the FISA court anyway and pretend that it is substantiated.
So it was so amazing. Can you prove the document you handed in is real? So they didn't ask Christopher Steele to look at a separate document. They look at them to hand his own document. So Auchtin testified. This was the readout we got from our reporters. Brian Auchtin testified that he and a group of FBI agents went overseas in early October of 2021 to talk to Christopher Steele about the reports that later became known as the Steele dossier. During questioning from Durham, Auchtin said that during those meetings, the FBI offered Christopher Steele $1 million if he could corroborate allegations in the dossier, but that Steele could not do it. So the whole thing that James Comey was so confused in 2016, he goes, Mr. President-elect, I got to meet. I just got this information. It might be true. It might not be true. But I want to tell you, from that moment on, James Comey and Donald Trump had a problem. Trump goes, I'm being set up.
But Comey knew he couldn't prove the truth.
Knew it.
But it's been going on for 6 years.
Right.
Why are we just finding out about this now? I think that's on Durham, frankly.
I don't know. Durham's timeline was slower than I think anybody wanted it to be. But, you know, COVID was in the middle of it, and I don't know, only he can answer that question. But here's the other thing. So the person that they thought was going to substantiate the story that was told to Steele was Igor Danchenko, who's now on trial for lying to the FBI. And it turns out, this is the case that they're making, that the sources that he said he was getting this information from in some cases don't appear to have existed, or phone calls that were never made, or trips that he said he was taking to gather this information, which turned out to be for some other personal purpose. So he could say, oh, yeah, I just went here and I went there and I got all this information. But the person he was in touch with was Dolan, who was a PR guy from the Clinton campaign.
Right.
So
when we had friendly relations with Russia, Dolan was there when Yeltsin was friendly and we were trying to help them transition to capitalism to a degree. So Dolan stayed. His contacts went through the Putin years. And when it was time to set up Trump, he was trying to set it up. He couldn't do it. And with this guy, Danchenko was hearing hearsay, helped put together the Steele dossier and then the kicker, which if it was a novel, I'd go, okay, I'm going to close this. I'm wasting my time. He was paid by the FBI.
Unreal.
Danchenko. So he's on trial for lying to the FBI, but while he's on FBI's payroll. Insane.
Meanwhile, they're saying that Carter Page, who was also on their payroll at one point, never was. He never was. That's why we have to investigate him with a FISA application. We're going to follow Carter Page, who happens to be a very peripheral foreign policy advisor. I think he went to one meeting or something. Never met Trump. But he's the guy that we have to nail down here. Right. And just also think about Jim Comey sitting in that room with President Trump or then candidate Trump and saying, sir, I got to show you this. This is pretty bad. We are, you know, this is going to get printed. Reporters have this story about you and the prostitutes and in the hotel in Moscow. And Comey knows they can't nail it down. They tried to pay the guy $1 million to nail it down, and they couldn't.
And they bought it from that source from BuzzFeed, and it ends up being published. And then people debate it for the next 3.5 years. Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, Martha, Bill Hammer, is it all right if I ask Martha who's going to be on her show?
Heck yes.
All right.
Oh my gosh.
3 o'clock, Martha.
So let's see.
There's Devin Nunes.
We do have Devin Nunes because I talked to you about that this morning. I said this morning when I was reading the story about, or last night when it came out from Jake Gibson. Devin Nunes was basically vilified for trying to warn President Trump that there was something going on that was trying to take him down, and that it didn't smell so great about what was going on at the FBI. So we're going to talk to Devin Nunes about his reaction
that to $1 million to Christopher Steele to
verify. $1 million couldn't buy a solid story from Christopher Steele, which I think is extraordinary. We're also going to have Mark Penn and Mercedes Schlapp come on, and we're going to talk about what's going on in the Fetterman race, which I just find fascinating.
Great. Very interesting.
Great piece today by Selena Zito about, you know, for even if you put the cognitive stuff aside for a minute, take a look at Braddock, the town that he says he saved.
It's a mess.
It's a dump.
And the fact that they didn't show up, they want it to be saved. He didn't show up as lieutenant governor. He would never show up and do his job. Lived at home till he was 40. It's Bernie Sanders is his political idol. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to frack. He wants like criminals out of prison. These are all the things that don't get you the nomination.
October 25th is the date that is on the calendar for that debate.
You don't think it's going to happen?
I didn't say that. Fetterman told NBC yesterday, or Friday when they did the interview, that he would be there.
I think it will happen. Yeah.
Right.
I think
it's got to be an Aaron Hayes.
I think what the NBC reporter said is very interesting. When they were off camera and just in casual conversation, she noticed that he had a really hard time picking up what she was trying to communicate to him.
That's Dasha Burns. She did an excellent job. She was very fair, and she explained quite clearly what his situation was.
I cannot wait for 3 o'clock. I cannot wait for your show from 9 to 11 tomorrow.
Thank you, brother.
I just can't wait for everything. Brian, kill
Thanks,
me,
Brian.
Chip. Can't wait for what's next.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.